welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. With me today, relationship life coach Cindy Chavez. This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. Jackie Gates, unfortunately, is going to be missing for a week or two or more. Hopefully not too long. So we'll definitely miss her. I mean, like, she lifts the energy around here like crazy. But we will continue on. And in the vein of what we did last week, because Cindy introduced us to human design, I have to admit, Cindy, I'd never even heard the term before. And that was quite the experience. That was the first time I've ever experienced something where, you know, it's one of these things where you chart stuff out and it was actually true for me. So you got my attention. Well done, I have to say.
Well, thank you. And I'm so happy to hear that. I've had a couple people reach out to me because they heard the reading that I gave for you and they were like, okay, I have to know about this.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of those things. If you hear that it's good, it's like, okay, tell me about it. I'm curious. What does it say about me? Yeah, and that's perfectly understandable. Now, one thing that does come out of this, and we figured this would make a good conversational topic today, is we humans, particularly those of us in these law of attraction, conscious creator type circles, there are a lot of us who rely on these external, I'll call them external reports or external influences as a way of almost running their lives. And when things go well, they'll say, oh, well, it's the external force. And when things aren't going well, they'll say, well, of course, it's the external force.
Yes. I that is kind of true in every, I want to say every spiritual kind of tradition, that just different religions and different frames of thought, right? It's because we always maybe don't want to take complete responsibility for what's happening.
Yeah. And there it is. You just put your finger on the sore spot.
Yeah, it's like, things are going good. God is blessing me. Things are going terrible. The devil's really coming against me, right? Like, I remember hearing that a lot when I was in Christian circles. But I still think, like, you just worded it in a way that would be applicable whether you were, you know, even believed in God or not. It's just,
oh,
like,
absolutely. Yeah.
Right? It's like, yeah. So So
the one I like to point to is Mercury in retrograde. We've done a lot of talk about that one. And when you think about the fact, right, Mercury is in retrograde like, what, 40% of the time or something like that? It's some large chunk of time throughout the year.
Three times a year for a couple of weeks. Yeah. So it is pretty often.
And then you got all the other retrogrades, because apparently all the planets at one point or another go into retrograde. So, I mean, you can be, if you really want to, you can find something to blame almost every single day of the year, which is very helpful if you want to blame something.
That is so true. And, you know, we as humans, we often do want to blame, you know, our woes on something outside of ourselves, right? But the energy of blame is at the bottom of the energy scale.
Mm-hmm.
Which means we don't use that energy really to ever create anything consciously that's wonderful.
Well, unless you like the bottom of the scale. I mean, I honestly think there are some people who do like that bottom of the scale.
Well, you know, here's the thing, is that the bottom of that scale and blame, just the idea of blame, sometimes we blame ourselves.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And that's different than taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a different energy completely. And when we're down there in that victim mode, you know, here's the thing. When we're there, and we've all been there, part of us really loves it.
Yeah.
Part of us likes to play the victim. Part of us likes that, poor me, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, you're right. If we get down there and we stay down there and we're really digging it down there, we'll just create more and more of that for ourselves. I don't want to do that. I recognize that a big part of my young life was spent in that kind of energy, and probably not completely victim mode, but more of, and it shows up in every chart I have done, no matter what kind of chart it is, but more of the martyr kind of mode, where, you know, I can say that I'm just in service to everyone, but gosh, you are such a martyr. And
yes,
what I realize is that there is a space to grow out of that and be able to use everything, every experience that you've had that's fit into that category, as an experiment and as a learning, where you've learned things to help yourself and help others. And now whenever I feel that in my body, like victim mode, martyrdom, when I feel it, and, you know, talk about human design as a projector, an orchestrator, my feeling that I get when I'm overextending myself, when I'm not resting enough, when I'm taking on too much, when I'm saying yes, yes, yes to everyone and trying to help everyone and becoming sliding into that martyr mode is resentment or bitterness. Mm-hmm. So when I feel that now, not back then, but now when I feel it, I immediately check myself and I go, oh, I'm not getting enough rest. I'm saying yes too much. You know, if you're over, if you're feeling resentful, you're probably just over giving.
Like, that's true.
You're not saying no enough. Like, you're saying yes to too many people and you're doing too many things, usually for other people. That's why we get resentful. We start resenting, like, I work so hard. I do everything for everyone.
Probably the good clue is when we're saying yes through gritted teeth.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or, you know, I was really good when I was younger at always having a smile on my face. So I would have a job where I was always like saying yes and smiling about it. And of course, as soon as I got my car to drive home, I was like grumbling about it and saying, oh my gosh, how much more work do they think I can handle?
Yes, right.
And someone would come in and say, oh, Cindy, we don't know what we'd do without you. You've done such a great job here. Do you think you could also do this? I would smile and say, sure, yeah.
Oh.
And at some point I realized all this resentment and it was on me. Like, I'm the one that's going to test to all this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hard space to get to, but it is also a great example of growth when it happens. Because when you can get to that place, well, first of all, you're taking the world off your shoulders. That's huge all by itself. Yeah. But second of all, you're learning something that I think you can count as a life lesson of a major kind, a kind that really just changes things for the better.
Well, and the difference, like, even between still being in that victim mode and blaming yourself, well, this is all my fault. You know, I put myself here. Mm-hmm. The shift is when you say, okay, this is on me. I'm responsible for my own experience. What can I do different now to change my experience? And you learn how to create stronger boundaries and you learn how to say, no, I won't be able to do that. I'm sure you'll figure out a way to make it happen. But so, yeah. So I like this topic though, that you thought up about, you know, external guidance. I think that's the word you used. And I thought that was really interesting.
Jeffrey raised an interesting question too, that I think goes to the heart of what we're talking about. So let me bring it in here. He says, what if it is not blame? Maybe just looking for clarity, like tarot or channel. And then he follows up by saying someone else to tell our story without knowing the details.
Ah, yeah. Well, here's the thing is, like, I love external guidance, if you will. However, I think it's important to be able to have the discernment within yourself to know whether that guidance is right for you. And I also think that, I mean, sometimes people can get like caught up in always needing guidance from outside themselves.
Yeah.
Where they don't do anything without hiring a reader or reading cards themselves or, you know, divining in some way. And I think we need to have some kind of balance in that, right? Where we can make decisions. But, you know, the interesting thing is, like, well, I'm trying to remember your human design chart, your what we call authority. I believe your authority is sacral. Is that right? So that's that That is, like, we want to say it's kind of the gut feeling of, like, is this right for me or not?
Mm-hmm. By the way, notice I just practiced it, by the way.
And that is, like, that's internal, right? That's internal guidance. But there are other things. There are three other authorities is what we call them. And one of them is splenic authority, which is completely intuitive, but not in the head. It's body intuition. Mm-hmm. And the other one is the one I have, which I'm jealous of yours because I think yours is easier to, the grass is always greener on the other side. Mine is emotional authority. And what that really means is that I experience a lot of emotions and they might not necessarily be tied to anything real or anything, you know, external or anything attached to me. And so my authority is to not make a decision in the emotional wave. Like I'm excited about something and I just want to say yes. Like it's the opposite of you. For a sacral person, when you're excited about something and you've got that, yeah, you know it, it's in. You can say yes and it's going to be right. For me, I might wake up the next day and say, oh, what have I done? Why did I say yes to this? And maybe it's because I woke up with a more of a down emotion that's not attached to anything. And I'm just like, so what I need to do is wait until I'm just neutral and I can think about it. So my strategy actually about that, making decisions, is sure, I might go for some external guidance, but I'm also going to wait. I'm going to wait. I'm going to say, I probably said this to you before, like, give me 24 hours or I'll talk to you about it tomorrow or let's talk next week, because I'm buying some time so that I'm getting through all the waves that may come of thinking about how great this thing could be or how not so great this thing could be, and just getting clear on all those things and then making my decision from a neutral space. But I said all that to say the fourth type of authority is no authority, no inner authority. And I don't know too many people, but I actually just got off the phone with somebody that had that in their chart, no inner authority. And I was talking actually to this person's partner the day before, and I just described them from their chart, and their partner said, oh my gosh, that is exactly what's happening. And I didn't understand it, because what's happening when you don't have inner authority, you need to talk about it. And in the process of talking about it, you'll hear all the things you're saying, you know, you'll hear all these thoughts that you had that seemed so confusing, and suddenly it will be clear. And so it's like you need a sounding board when you don't have that inner authority. And once you talk about it and you make it input from your conversation partner, right? And you talk about it and then you're like, oh, okay, this seems so obvious now. And it really helped this person a lot to realize that about their partner, because they said to me, well, they're always bringing me things like that seem so obvious to me and they just can't see it. And then they talk about it and then suddenly they're acting like it was real obvious. Like, oh, I know what to do. I said, well, that's because in the process of talking about it, it did become obvious to them. So I'm not sure if that would actually be considered, you know, external guidance, but it's sort of an external process because, right?
And well, so, sure, because you're looking outside for some data. Even if you're not looking for the guidance, you're looking for the data.
Right, exactly. So as far as like, I know you were mentioning when we were having a discussion about the show today, you were talking about like different external guidance that people look for, like channelers or astrology or even human design reading or, you know, I even think of like coaching or counselors or, you know, because it's all, even friends, even showing up at a friend and saying, can you tell me what you think about this situation? Like, what would you do, right? That's all very external. But I think we still always want to develop the ability to bring it back and check it within ourselves. And if we don't have inner authority, then we check it within ourselves by listening to ourselves talk about it.
Which is still a way to do it. So at least there's a method there. And that's the most important thing, having a method. The question that, and I love the way you're answering this, you're kind of getting ahead of me in a good way. The question in my mind was, for someone who isn't clear about when to use it and when not to use it, how can we draw guidelines here? How can we say, you know, in situation X, you really don't want to be relying on the external guidance, but in situation Y, you do, and here's why.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of different ideas in my head about this. I mean, because I do come from a place of wanting to choose the idea that there are no mistakes, just human experience. So, you know, a coaching question that many coaches will ask, and it's a fantastic question, is it's like, what would you do if you couldn't make a mistake? If someone's trying to make a decision, because I think that so many times in a decision make, especially a big decision, a decision making process, there's the idea that, you know, it's not just going to affect us. It might affect our kids or our spouse or, you know, people close to us, whatever the decision is. And we start taking all of that into consideration. And I think we should take that into consideration. I mean, it's called meta planning, right? Like, what else is this going to affect? And yet, I still think that it's important that in the end, once we get the guidance from outside, once we get other opinions, once we've talked about it, once we've maybe journaled about it, that we come back to the place where we are checking in with ourselves, because we are so conditioned to do things a certain way. You know, like we were talking about in human design, like only, I think 8% of people are what we call manifestors, people that can initiate something and just go do it without having to respond to anything, just do it. And yet we, even in the law of attraction circles, we kind of train everyone to do that. Like, you know, just, you got an idea, just go do it. Like, and it doesn't work as well for most people as it does for this very small group. So checking in, I think, is important. Knowing how you make decisions and checking in with yourself. I mean, the bigger the decision, I think the more important both of those things are. The more important maybe external input can be.
Mm-hmm.
But for sure, the more important it is that you know internally that this is the right decision. Like, I was telling you before the show that I just paused my Facebook group for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that group for over 7 years.
Long time.
And I have taken time off before, but only twice. I took 10 days off at the beginning of August this year. And before that, I decided to take a summer off a few years ago, and that turned into a year. Like, it wasn't well done. I wasn't real clear about what I needed or wanted. I just knew that I needed to take time off. So
that's what you mean. Okay.
I'm going to take the summer, and then I just could not go back until I did. And it was the right time when I went back. And it's been a great, great group. And then I've got this very specific internal guidance to take the season off, to pause the group for the season. And I really, a huge part of me did not want to do it.
Hmm.
And most of that was attached to, you know, worries, fears.
Sure.
You know, that I had about the group. Maybe not being there when I come back, or what are they going to do, or what am I going to do, or how's this going to play out? How is this really actually going to be good? You know, it's just, I had so many questions. But here's the thing, even with all those questions rattling around in my defined head center that never stops thinking, I knew it was the right thing. I was very, very clear, and I didn't need to know the outcome of it. I didn't need to know how it was going to unfold, what was going to be the result, any of those things. I was like, no, I'm just really clear on this.
Yeah.
And I don't think I could always do that when I was younger, make a decision. I always had to analyze everything in pretty much. I wanted some kind of certainty of what the goal was going to be, what the result was going to be, how it was going to unfold. And then I would say yes. And I realize now that that is about wanting to feel safe.
Absolutely.
And where I'm at now is I just feel safe, period.
That's cool.
Because I know that the universe is always supporting me, and I know that I'm never going to abandon myself. So it's like, I feel this very clearly, and I'm going to do it. And I don't have any idea what the result will be.
Which is the more daring approach. But the coolest part about what you just described is that you're listening to an internal guidance, and you're taking that internal guidance over what your bigger sense of it is. And that's not easy to do. I'm going to come at that same point from another viewpoint. I think what happens with a lot of people who rely heavily on those external factors, you know, the human design, the astrology, what is something in retrograde, the psychic mediums, all the different external sources you can go to, the ones who really rely on them are the ones who don't trust what they're getting inside. Or maybe they feel like I felt for many years, they're not getting anything inside. And so you can kind of look inside, but if you're not seeing anything, you're not hearing anything, you're not getting anything, how are you going to trust it? Or if you are getting something, but you don't trust it, how are you going to go with it?
Well, the trust thing is interesting because, you know, sometimes like I'm trying to remember if I did this with this particular situation, but using those tools as sort of like a confirmation of your decision.
Mm.
Right. And like, you know, saying, well, pretty much decided this, but I wanted to check in with whatever tool we're using or with whatever kind of counsel we have to see what comes up for them. And if it's, you know, I always think there's so many situations though, where someone's made a decision and then everyone in their life says, oh, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, right.
Right. That we're told so many times that we should find a support system that actually supports us, right? That believes in us and our ideas, not just. And so, you know, that's another thing, is it's just always going to come back to your inner authority, your inner, like you said, trust that you have in yourself. And when you have the idea that there are no mistakes, you can take everything a little bit lightly and trust that if you make a decision that turns out to not be what you expected, and maybe it's not great like you thought it was going to be, that you'll know what to do, that you will make a change. Now, as far as like confirmations, this is interesting. When I made the decision that I might have talked about this the day we talked about your chart, but I don't remember. But when I made the decision to pause my group, the shortcut to my group that's on the left-hand side of my dashboard, because I pinned it there, and it's at the top, and it has been there for 8 years, it disappeared.
It disappeared? Oh, my.
And I had not paused the group yet. I hadn't even told anyone yet. I just made the decision. And the next day, I went, and I opened the group, and I went, where is it? And there's one other group I manage. It was there. And then other groups I'm a member of, they were there. But the shortcut to the group that I run was gone. I had to use the search function to bring it up. And it never reappeared for the next, that was about 3 weeks before I actually paused the group. I paused the group yesterday. It never reappeared. I still had to search for it. And so I kind of took that as a sign or a, you know, an indication that, okay, like, but is it an indication that I made the right choice? I don't know. It's just an indication that that's where I'm aligned.
Yes.
Right. I mean, I made that decision and my being was aligned with that decision. I wasn't struggling with it or fighting against it. I did all the thought processes of everything, but there was no resistance, and I made the decision with no resistance. And here comes a few little things that said, okay, you don't need that shortcut anymore.
Yeah. Very, very cool. I like that. Jeffrey brought up a question. I'm going to throw it up here on the screen for people who are watching the live stream. Do you think it's fair to say, in terms of LOA, we hear what we need to hear when and how we need to hear it, or see or feel or taste, think, etc.?
Yeah, I do, actually. I mean, I feel like I'm answering that question too quickly, but I do have that sense that, you know, when I teach classes, I have this propensity to try to feed you a whole cake instead of just a slice of cake. You know, it's like I sometimes give too much information in a
class. Can you have too much cake? Really? No, I'm sorry. That's an off point question.
And I've dealt with that two ways. One is I've realized it, and when I do put together a class, I try to pull way back and not give so much material that people are overwhelmed. But the other thing that I've often told my students or my participants is just get what you get. Like, don't worry about absorbing every single thing that is taught here. Show up, be open, come with two ideas that we're going to throw out. One is that I already know all of this, and the other one is this is too much. I'll never get it all. Just get rid of both of those. They both hinder you from learning. And then be open, and then get what you get, because you are going to get what you need. And, you know, you and I had this experience when we taught the Neville books. And then like a year into it, we came back and we taught a same Neville book again. And we were both like, are we sure this is the same book?
Same book, right?
We read that before. Like, I don't remember this. And there were so many things. And it was funny because I had highlighted my book the first time around. But it wasn't the highlighted things that were now standing out. It was other things that I was like, how did I miss that? Well,
yeah.
it wasn't for me at the time. I didn't need it right then, and I needed it when I got it. So Jeffrey, I say yes. Now, as far as when you go into other of the senses and you talk about tastes and, you know, smells, sometimes we are so much in our head at the urging of the society who tends to think that the thoughts in our head are the most important thing, that we kind of disassociate from our body and we don't embody life the way we could. And I think in those instances, we might miss tastes and smells. Like, in other words, you know, I was driving down the road one day and I saw someone like eating a hamburger while they were driving. They were just like gorging on the hamburger, like just shoving it in their mouth as fast as they could. And they were driving fast and they were in a hurry. Like, and I said, I wonder if they tasted it, you know, because sometimes we miss some of our senses just because we're in a hurry or we're too much in our head. So I think that embodiment practice is really important in making decisions. Like, we're talking about inner guidance, outer guidance. So recognizing that we're in our body and like paying attention to what we're feeling, just in the same way when we talk about Neville's methods, and we talk about, you know, when we're envisioning, when we're assuming the feeling of the wish fulfilled, mm-hmm. and we're not watching ourselves climb a ladder like a movie, but we're feeling our feet on the rungs and our hands holding the ladder. And we smell, you know, whatever we're smelling, the fresh cut grass, and we're hearing the birds. And so we're embodying that. And I think we don't just need to do that in when we're doing Neville's assuming the wishes, but we need to do that all the time. We need to be in our bodies, because our bodies are present here now, and our head is often in the past or the future, and we don't create in the past or the future. We create right now. And so when we get used to being in our body, I used to have this wonderful friend that's passed away recently. May she rest in peace. And she was a hypnotist. And one of the things she would ask you if she was working with you and you were making a decision, she would say, "What does your body mind say?" And I loved that phrasing, because it always took me by surprise, no matter how many times she said it. And I couldn't answer quickly, because it was like, body mind. Oh. And I'd have to check in with my body, not just my thoughts, right? Yeah. So that's part of that internal decision making.
One thing that you mentioned, and this kind of ties into what you just said, but earlier you talked a little bit about, how did you say it? About worrying about whether or not you're getting all the internal message, and instead of worrying about it, going with what message you are getting. I may be phrasing it incorrectly, but that's the sense of what I got that you were talking about. And I thought it was really important. To the point where I want to share something that I think corroborates it. Everyone I think here knows that, I've been in David Strickle's Taya Bootcamp, which is 17 or 18 modules and a bunch of, group meetings and channeling with the stream and coaching sessions. And it's a very cool package. Right now I'm up to module 12. And just before you do module 12, there's a video that you see, created and recorded with the stream. And the stream is essentially saying, you may have come into this boot camp feeling like you really wanted to improve your internal communication, but you may be taking it to an extreme. And the extreme is, well, you know, you want to be hearing words, or you want to be experiencing it in a certain way. You're not getting that. Mm-hmm. And their message was, don't get hung up on that. Get hung up on the stuff that you are getting. Because the moment that you do that, you are now, well, the moment that you're doing the first thing where you're hung up on the stuff, that's when you're down the spiral. The moment that you're accepting and liking what you're getting, then you're up the spiral, which is exactly where you want to be.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really good point.
It is. And, you know, I think what you were referring to, what I was talking about, was like learning something like in a class, but it's the same idea, right? It's like, I would rather have someone in one of my classes take one thought, one idea in the entire class and really ponder it and apply it and get it in their bones, then try to memorize everything and just have head knowledge of thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, same kind of thing. It's like, yeah, it's like, don't worry about what you're not getting. What are you getting?
Yeah.
And then with that, you know, this idea that I really do love this idea that there are no mistakes, because I adopted that idea pretty far into my life, my late 40s. And I had often looked back and thought that I had a lot of mistakes in my life. And I realized they weren't mistakes. They were just human experience. And that out of them came an abundance of knowledge and wisdom and treasure that have not just helped me, but have allowed me to help others. So how could those things be mistakes? So now when I'm in that process, I don't think I go for a lot of external guidance anymore. It's more like external validation for what I've already decided.
Mm.
And I'm not even sure that that's, you know, something that we need to worry about either, but I am human. So, you know, I'd like to.
Well, let's be honest. It's intriguing. When you did my human design chart last week and you came up with all these things and you were saying, well, your chart says this about you and says that about you. I was saying, well, yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, that's interesting. Like, oh my God, how'd the chart do that? That's my feeling about it.
It's interesting. And, you know, there's probably like 20 more hours that we could talk about just your chart. And, you know, but for me, the most interesting thing is knowing, or one of the most interesting things is getting to know the centers in the chart, the ones that are open and the ones that are defined, and knowing how to work with those. You know, like we talked about that open will center that you have and I have as well. And I don't know how well I articulated it that night, but that will center has to do with value. And I thought about it later. I was like, oh my gosh, all my life, I have said yes, 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 yes to too many requests, right? Where I've put myself on the back burner because I was busy helping everyone else. And why did I do that? Because I thought that the more things I could do, that the more value I would have.
Hmm.
So the whole idea of like proving yourself, like I was trying to be valuable by extending myself as much as I could with helping and helping and helping. And the thing is that there's nothing I can do that can make me more valuable. And there's nothing I can do that will cause me to lose my value.
Yes.
My value is intrinsic because I'm a human and so is yours. And so we don't have to try to take on more and more. And for you as a manifesting generator, you know, you've got those motors, you've got that engine. As long as what you're doing is a yes for you, those engines are going, you will make the energy and have the energy. But for me as a projector, I don't have that energy and I don't have that sacral motor to keep it going or to produce it on its own. So saying yes to everything for me to prove my value is only going to leave me burned out and not valuable to anyone, right?
Well, I can assure you it'll burn me out too. Maybe not as fast, but I think it's going to burn anybody out when you're basically trying to live to please somebody else. That's going to kill you.
Correct. Well, a generator or a manifesting generator, even though they have that motor to create energy, they will burn out too if they're saying yes for the wrong reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really your sacral telling you this is a yes. That's you deciding you need to prove yourself valuable and do more and more. So, yeah, and burnout is just—it's just not fun. It's not useful.
So let's take this into the coaching context, because that's what you do. You are a coach. Yeah. In the coaching context, you mentioned last week that you started doing these charts for some of your clients with their permission, because you wanted to tie it into what you were doing to help them. And so I'm just curious, from like a general perspective, how do you use it in that kind of environment?
Well, first of all, let's back up and talk about, you know, when someone hires a coach, because a lot of people that have never been coached before don't really understand what that is.
Good point.
Because it's different than therapy. Therapy is often helping us come from a dysfunctional place to a functional place. Coaching is helping us go from a functional place to an optimal place.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a place for all of it, right? But coaching is also not advising. Sometimes it can be. It's not consulting. Sometimes it can be. You know, they kind of overlap. But with coaching, I am helping you make your own decision. I'm not telling you what to do or saying that's consulting, right? The consultant says, oh, your best bet is to do this. And you go, okay, because they know, because it's a topic that they know how to have success there, or a mentor. With a coach, I know that you have your own answers and you might feel stuck because you aren't clear on those, but I have the tools to help you get clear. So you're getting clarity and then you're making your own decision. And I'm facilitating that and that. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So the way I use, human design in my coaching is, for instance, you know, I had someone that was talking about, they also had an open head center and they had been talking about wanting to get quiet. And, you know, I was able to say something interesting for them anyway. And it was that, you know, I have a defined head center. My brain never stops thinking. The thoughts never stop. I said, you know how some people will say, well, get a nap, you know, or fall asleep and put on some beautiful music and just, you know, I can't do that because when I put on beautiful music, my head center is defined and I'm also a musician. I start charting the music in my head. I start deciding what key it is and that I think it should actually be in this key. And I think a harmony would be nice here. And, oh, that would be harmony. My brain never stops going. So what I said to them though is here, when you have an open head center, you take in all of the thoughts, ideas, and questions that people around you have, because especially if they have defined head centers, they're always projecting, they're always broadcasting, and then you pick it up. And so you may feel pressure to answer questions. You may feel because the head center is a pressure center, you may always feel pressure to be fixing things or answering things for people or having the right information for them to help them. And I help them to see that even though that's going on, they don't have to do that. It's not for them to have to be the answer for everyone, even though they probably can. And that when you have that open head center, you do have the ability to have a restful mind. You do have the ability to get a very calm, peaceful place in your mind. And, you know, that's that place everyone wants because that's when you access like consciousness and, you know, the meaning of your life. And it's very difficult for someone with a defined head center to do that. But people with open head centers can do that much easier if they intend it, right? If they consciously realize all these thoughts in my head and all these answers I feel like I have to have, it's not really, it's just who I am. I can let those thoughts just go by. And so it was really useful to them. I had another person that was feeling, with an open will center, feeling lacking in self-worth, I guess you would say, not totally as a life, you know, theme, but just in that day, just in that moment. And, I pointed out to them that they had been with a certain person and that the person was going through struggles and that they were just picking up that person's feeling of unworthiness and struggle. And when you have an open center, you not only pick it up, but you magnify it.
Oh.
So like if you have an open spleen center, you will pick up feelings other people have and magnify them. So someone may be with you and they may be feeling a little bit sad, like a 2 on a 10 scale, just a little. They're okay. They're just having some, you know, things go by. And then you, with your open spleen center, you may say, oh my gosh, I was with so-and-so today. They were so sad. You felt like a 10 because you magnify it and blow it up. So when you know these things about your own design, it's really helpful.
Mm.
Because then when you feel certain things or you have too many thoughts or you feel pressure to answer, to be, you know, able to answer everyone's ideas, you can know that that's why you're getting that. And one of my clients is like an ace at being able to turn that off and choose that peaceful mind. And it's just a useful thing to know about yourself.
So, oh, it's very valuable. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is, you know, I've coached for a decade without knowing, you know, without knowing people's charts.
Yeah.
But it is another tool that I have that's been really useful to be able to, sometimes I'm coaching someone, I have their chart there and they'll say something and I'll look over and I'll be, ha.
Well, it strikes me that what you're doing is you're holding up a mirror for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is it's sort of like holding up a mirror for someone that's never seen a mirror before.
Ah, okay.
Right? You see, like, the first time you show a little baby a mirror.
Yes.
They're like, oh, right? They're like, wow, that's me. So yeah. And also a lot of, you know, the idea is that we're, Deepak Chopra had a quote one time that I've used often. And it's that there are no missing pieces in the universe. I've always loved that. There are no missing pieces. Like, you are the piece that you are supposed to be. And you are designed the way you're supposed to be designed to fit into the puzzle of humanity. Like, we all fit together. And that's really validating. So many people think there's something wrong with them.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And there's nothing wrong with you. You know, you need to know your design. You were designed perfectly. You were made perfectly and wonderfully.
What's one of the most common phrases I hear from somebody, particularly somebody trying to learn law of attraction for the first time or having trouble manifesting what they're looking to manifest or something along that line. They'll say, I must be doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you're never doing anything wrong.
Right.
You're finding another way perhaps not to manifest the thing that you're looking for, but you're not doing anything wrong.
Well, you know, so many people ask me, especially when they first come to me and we start working together, we have our initial like conversation, we're getting to know each other. I'm trying to figure out like what it is that you want. What do you want me to help you create? And they will say, well, you know, I want this and I've tried this and this and this and I still don't have this. And what do I do? And there was a saying that I learned. It might be a Buddhist thing, but I learned it in coaching school. And it was basically that doing is work and being is effortless. And so we always think we have to do to get the result we want. We even, it's like, I do this for a paycheck. Like, I do this and I get this. What do I do? Because I want to get this. And it's so much more about who you're being, not what you're doing. Right? Like, are you being that person that has that thing already? Are you being, you know, for me, it's acceptance. It's that when we are not accepting the way things are, and everyone that comes to me for coaching is not accepting the way things are.
True.
For the most part, they're like, I don't want this thing I have. I want this thing over here. How can we get it? And that's cool. That's a part of humanity. You know, welcome to Earth. That's part of the human experience. We're all going to go through that. So I'm not shaming anybody. I do it too all the time.
Anyway. Sure. Me too.
I want something different. But what I do know is that most of the time, it's just about being. It's about who I am being. And that's where I point our direction as a coach with my client. It's not what you're doing. We may touch on that, you know, but it's going to be who you are being. And the doing comes out of the being. So when we can get there, then that's a point of acceptance. It's like, I accept everything the way it is. Even the things I think I don't like, I have a knowledge that everything's working out perfectly. And I am truly there, at least right now, at least this week, right? I am really in that space of knowing that everything is unfolding perfectly, that everything is how it is. And I'm not resisting anything. I'm not struggling over anything. I'm not resisting it. It is the way it is. Is everything in my life perfect? No. But yes, it is actually.
That's good. I like that. Hey, in the live stream, Avi posted something, and I think he was expressing it. Most of the way it's worded is expressed as a statement, but he put a question mark at the end. So I'm going to treat it like a question. I'll throw it up on screen here. He says, emotional guidance, I feel, is the most powerful guidance, but he puts the question mark at the end. So I'll rephrase it as, is emotional guidance the most powerful guidance?
Well, I get the sense that when we talk about emotional guidance on this show, we're talking about Abraham Hicks and the emotional guidance scale. And so it is very powerful, and it does tell you very, very much about your alignment, right? So it's like not good or bad. It's just where you're aligned. And we have to be in alignment with our true self to be able to consciously create what we want. Now, as far as human design, we were talking about authority, and that's this decision-making process. So there's emotional, there's splenic, there's sacral, and then there's no authority. So there's emotional, guidance, I guess you would call it, there as well as one of the aspects. I think it is all really important. I don't know how to answer the question of making it sort of superlative. You know, is it the most powerful? I think that it's definitely important, very, very important. I mean, you have to know what you're feeling, but I think the thing that's important to remember about emotional guidance, whether you're talking about human design or Abraham Hicks or emotions in particular, is that emotions are in the body, not in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And thoughts are in our head, but not emotions. And I'm not sure that that's all the way recognized by everyone. Because so many people are disassociated. They're not in their body. They're in their head most of the time because we've been taught to be in our head most of the time. And emotions are felt in the body. It's emotion, energy and motion. They work through our body. And so I think that's the most powerful guidance, is when we learn to embody those things and feel the emotions in our body and recognize that's where the guidance is. It's not in our head.
There's an interesting aspect to this that I want to bring in, because I think you've been touching on something that a lot of people have fairly strong opinions about, the question of heart versus head, body versus head, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the thing I want to bring in is the heart, because if you talk to a medical researcher or some sort of scientist, you will find, particularly one who has studied the heart in this way, they'll tell you that the heart is directly intertwined with the brain. That in fact, much of the neural activity that happens in the brain is directly tied to neural pathways in the heart.
Right. That's like that coherence. Word that like heart math uses is coherence, where you're coherent between your heart and your brain.
Exactly.
Your systems in your body. Yeah.
And yet at the same time, our heart is part of our body. And in fact, we feel a lot of emotions in the chest area. I mean, that's where a lot of them come in. Right. So I guess from my perspective, it's no wonder we get confused about head versus heart.
Yeah. Well, I think that because emotions in general are often, frowned upon, right? I mean, you even hear people talk about it. It's like, don't be so emotional.
Yeah.
Like if we're expressing an emotion, there's something wrong with us. I've heard people talk about apologizing for showing any kind of emotion on the job or at work, or being scolded by a superior being emotional at work. Like emotions are something bad. And so what happens a lot of times, and it's a kind of something that starts when we're younger, when we're being scolded for, like you said the other night, even being too happy, sometimes kids get scolded for, calm down in there, you're too joyful.
Right.
And please don't cry and don't be mad. And all these things we're always told not to be. And so you end up numbing out to things that are emotional. And like when we talked about my injury in Dallas and the tapping, I had that recognition that, none of those were super strong emotions, like you would have if you lost someone and you were grieving, or like if, they were minor, but I realized that I got past them and I wanted to just shove them all aside. And I think we do that so often, where we don't process emotions, and where we're not allowed to have them by whatever power that is. That we start to numb out to them, and then we're always going to our head for guidance, like logic, right? Logical things. I don't know if I told this part of the story, but when we were trying to decide whether to leave or not when the storm was coming, we had all these discussions about it, and I kept coming up with reasons why we should stay. And then the night before we left, we were standing in the kitchen. We were making tea. And I said, oh my gosh. And my husband said, what? And I said, I have been arguing all day with my intuition.
Oh my.
Because all the arguments I was making for staying were very logical.
Mm.
And all of a sudden it hit me that whenever my logical brain starts really arguing with something that's coming up within me, it's arguing with my intuition.
Yeah.
And that's how I know that it's my intuition half the time. I'm like, oh, I've been arguing about this for half an hour. I have an idea. And then all these logical reasons, logic is not, you know, logic is important for a lot of things, but in the decision-making process, when it's, you know, usually not, logic is not the best tool.
I know that for a fact, because I have plenty of experience with it. I have used that many times to my own detriment. I'm very good at that.
You're talking about the heart. I mean, if we can be embodied and feel our emotions in our body, and our heart, like you said, is full of emotion and it's in our body. I mean, when we talk about love, we talk about the heart. We draw heart.
That's right. Yeah.
So if we can stay there in our body and ask what our body mind is thinking about this decision, it's automatically connected to our mind.
Mm.
Or I should say to our brain.
To the brain.
Our mind is not our brain, but
yeah,
it's automatically connected to our brain. And our brain does more than just have thoughts. That's an important thing to recognize, because our brain is like the marionette that's controlling, you know, our actions, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Our brain is like all the neural firings that are happening that are controlling what we're doing. Most of our decisions are subconscious ones. So if we can embody ourselves enough to really feel the emotion and use that, we won't need as much external guidance. But as someone who is a coach, as well as a human design projector who are here to be guides for the world, you know, I'm not saying you never need external guidance, because I will just talk myself right out of a job, right?
Talk about planned obsolescence. Oh, my goodness.
Right. But when I help guide you, what I'm really helping you do is I'm helping you guide yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a tarot card reader. Like, I love divination of all different kinds. I read the I Ching. So I'm not against any of that stuff. I just want to make sure that when you use any outside, any external guidance, that it is, that is jiving with your internal guidance.
And by the way, we were making fun a moment ago, but I want to really make sure I emphasize for people who might not have heard as much from Cindy as I have and many of our listeners have. And that is, she is not somebody who's going to hang on to a client as much as possible to wring as much money as possible out of them. Her goal is to get them on their path as fast as she can get them there. So well, yeah, we're kind of making fun about that.
As a matter of fact, there's only one way you can work with me as a private client. And it starts with a session that I call a transformational coaching session. And if you like, it contains human design and it may be all you need. And I always tell everybody that when we get started, this might be all you need. Like, mm-hmm, after this one session, you may be good to go. You may want to hire me for 12 weeks and we have 12 sessions to work something all the way out. Or you may want to say, I think I'm good to go for now, and I'll hire you for one session when I need it here and there later.
Yeah,
I don't operate that way. Although my longest client that stayed with me for 9 years. And I have other clients that have been with me for 2, 3, 4 years, some of them solid, some of them on and off. But they keep hiring me because they're having more and more success. So it's not about me keeping you stunted so I can continue to guide you.
Right.
You have more and more success and you stay because it's working, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Big distinction there.
Yeah. But yeah, I can honestly say that, you might only, you know, you may find what you need after one session and have a big shift, and that may be all. So, and I'm good with that.
I also want to make a reference to something that Jeffrey posted, going back to when you were talking about how you could have that boss who you can't please the boss, and you're too emotional and you're too this, you're too that. He says, well, you could also be considered too stoic, which means it doesn't, I mean, with some people, you just can't win. That's just all there is to it. And I think that's when it's important to realize it's not your issue at that point, it's theirs.
You know, it's interesting because there's been this sort of unspoken rule in many like corporate circles that leaders, so I'm not talking about just anybody that works for a company, but that the leaders should not show emotion, should not be overly emotional, should not open up and talk about emotional things. Like leaders shouldn't do that. That's sort of like an unspoken thing. But when they've polled groups of people about who they think the best leaders are, it's always the leaders that are willing to show emotions, that are willing to talk about emotional things, and that are willing to accept that people are emotional beings. Those are always the leaders that people put at the top. So that little rule about, oh, you know, strong leaders don't show emotion, I don't think it pans out because the people don't agree with it, right?
Yeah. Well, they don't actually realize they're undermining themselves with that rule. Yeah. I mean, they want to lead these people. The people are making it clear in whatever way they can about what kind of leadership they're looking for. And the leader's giving them the direct opposite. That's not going to work out well. No matter, I don't care what kind of company you have. That's just not going to work out well.
I think I see so much, like I've always said that, you know, transformation can happen in a second, but evolution is like really slow, right? Evolution is painfully slow. But I feel like we're seeing humanity evolve. At least I feel like I'm seeing it over the past, you know, 20, 30 years, is that people are becoming more comfortable with knowing that emotions are, you know, valid and not to be pushed down and shoved aside.
Yes.
People are becoming more open about mental health issues and recognizing that it's not a flaw in someone, you know, to feel depressed or to have, you know, some kind of mental health thing going on. Like we don't say, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with you. You found out that you had, you know, cancer or that you had, you know, a common cold. We just say, oh yeah, that's life. That happens. That's terrible. But you know, that's the way life is. But then we treat mental health issues differently, right? Like,
we
want to talk about that. Or like when someone has had suicidal ideations, like everybody wants to just like close their eyes, shut their mouth, but the other way, like they don't know what to say. And I think as a society, we are getting more comfortable with knowing that these are parts of the human experience, and that the more we can accept the entire human experience, you know, the comfortable things and the uncomfortable things, the more we evolve, and the easier it is for humanity as a whole to create, you know, the kind of world that we want to have. And so I see that more and more, is that people are more open talking about things that are connected to emotion. And those are all internal. So that's, you know, that's a nice thing to be seeing.
It's encouraging, no doubt about it. And I agree with you. I'm seeing the exact same thing. I've been seeing it through most of my life. You know, I think different people perceive it in different ways. If you talk to, for instance, a gentleman who was on the show for a couple weeks, the last 2 weeks, Master Lama Rasaji, he'll tell you, well, yeah, we've been noticing it for the last 3,000 years, speaking of his order. You know, so it's all, you know, what your perception is, but.
Yeah, I guess I'm speaking from the Western mindset of like, yeah, right. I'm gonna catch up, right? I had someone ask me, but I said, well, the most powerful magic there is Tibetan magic or Buddhist magic, you know, and they said, what? I was like, oh, those Tibetan monks, like they can make your head spin with their magic, right? It wasn't, you know, it's not always flashy, but yeah, I think that's right. It's right. Humans are humans.
And isn't that a wonderful thing? I love that fact so much. Well, once again, you have hit the ball out of the park. Thank you very much for addressing this topic, because this is an important one. It's one that we really need to pay a little more attention to, so we don't get hung up on having the externals guide our lives and drive our lives. We're the drivers. We're the ones in the driver's seat.
Yes, yes. I love that about, we had Janet Dalglish on a few weeks ago talking about Mercury retrograde, and she's a fantastic astrologer, but she's also a wonderful coach. And, you know, one of the things that always lit me up about her way of practicing astrology is that she never looks at a chart and says, oh gosh, you know, like,
yeah, right.
You know, she's always like, oh, look at this. This is a fantastic opportunity. And I think that's the way we should always look at these things, you know, not the doom and gloom. Oh no, Mercury retrograde's coming. It's like, no, how can I use this to my benefit? And she talked about that. So that's a great podcast. That's a great one to go back and listen to. But yeah, agree. Totally agree. It's like we get our internal guidance going And then the external things can be validation and extra help.
So thank you, Cindy. Thank you, live streamers. Thank you especially to podcast listeners everywhere. And we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone.